We are now joined in our Acra studio here by Trevor. How do you guys say your last name? Groupe? Whoops! I don't have your mics on. How you now say it?
Groupie.
Maybe pull that microphone a little closer to you, and
sure.
Then yeah, now we can hear you good. And you're Trevor, and you're Mark Groupie from Gemini Construction in KRO.
Yep.
Yes, that's correct.
Welcome to the WGXC Morning Show. Can you tell us a little bit about your business? What kind of construction work do you do?
We're general contractors, offering full-line services in all the construction industries right here in the county. Everything from construction to excavation, plumbing, electric, emergency service, as well as some specialty stuff. So we're a full-line, one-stop shop. Anything you need, we are able to supply it for you.
How long have you guys been working in Greene County?
36 years. We formed our business in 1978.
Wow. How has things changed in Greene County over the years?
We've seen that the rules and regulations in the county, which in a lot of ways years ago were quite relaxed compared to a lot of the other surrounding counties and the urban areas, life has caught up here. A lot of the building requirements, a lot of the specialty stuff that involve land use and permitting and the general work hasn't gotten a lot more complicated because of the issue of trying to meet the requirements that the governmental agencies are asking you to do.
All right. If anyone's tuning in, we're talking to Trevor and Mark Groupe from Gemini Construction, and they'll take your questions. We already have a couple questions, but if you want to phone in a question, I'll give you the number now. It's 518-622-2598 for the next 10 minutes or so. 518-622-2598 is the number to call if you have any questions, I guess, about winterizing or general plumbing, electrical, or construction questions. I guess I just was reading the news, and all the news seemed like it was about local construction this morning.
Yeah, well, keeping America working keeps American people making money, making paychecks, paying their bills. So it's definitely something that weighs on everybody's minds, especially in this economy nowadays.
You say the towns are tighter, I guess, with regulations these days? Or
there's mandates that come down from the state. The Department of Labor has mandated some things that a lot of people aren't aware of that is quite different from years ago. One of the biggest things is now is to do with demolition. Years ago, you could approach a town, get a demolition permit, and then do your work to either destroy a building or do things like that. And the Department of Labor has mandated now that properties and existing buildings have to be surveyed for asbestos and lead. So if there's lead and asbestos present, it has to be abated first before the buildings can be demolished, which unfortunately raises a lot of costs, especially in one of the instances is old mobile homes. An old mobile home usually is an eyesore. It's usually something that can't be reused. And the nicest thing for the landscape would be to remove it, reprocess it, recycle it, and things like that. And sometimes the cost to abate the possibility of asbestos or lead on site is actually more than the demolition cost to remove the trailer. So you put the situation into limbo, where the buildings just remain because the financial aspects outweigh the benefits of doing the work.
Do you get a lot of that in projects around here, that the buildings are old and have lead in them, or other
problems? Sure, yeah, because we are dealing in an area of the country that literally could possibly have buildings upwards of 200 years old, because we are the first 13 colonies back in 1600s, possibly 1700s. So you have major issues that sometimes people are absolutely unaware of.
What are some specific issues to construction in this area that are unique to this area?
The finding skilled labor is one of the biggest things. Dependable labor also.
I guess there's a overall a problem of young people moving out of the area, and so you don't have young people to keep the businesses going,
that and a lot lack of training. Years ago, our instance is a perfect example. My brother and I were twins, formed the company in 1978, but worked with our dad. We worked with our dad literally when we were in our teens to kind of cut your teeth on the business, learn the processes, to kind of immerse yourself in the culture and the environment. And a lot of the times nowadays you don't see that. You don't see this lineage from father to son or grandfather to son to, that kind of thing, where trades usually were family-based, family-oriented. And this new culture with You know, the college experience and things like that, unfortunately, doesn't advocate this lineage where people learn their trades as hands-on. There are certain things that you cannot learn in a trade school. You have to be on the site. Equipment operation is a perfect example of that. You can watch a video and you can do everything you want, but unless your hands are on the controls of that machine, you will not develop those skills, and they're not an overnight thing that can be developed.
You need to do it a while, too.
It takes years.
What kind of machines do you guys use? You got snow plows.
We run the entire gambit. Everything from we use hand tools right up to major excavation equipment, excavators, bulldozers, skid steers. We have a mobile boom lift, the aerial lap platform, where we do high structure roofing, siding, chimney repairs, things like that. So sometimes to find talent that is skilled in that many trades is very, very hard to find.
Is there some sort of construction project that you're finding people are asking you to do? I don't know if you do solar or there's a new kind of project that is different than, say, 1970?
No, because we offer multi-trades, we're available for a lot of different things, which is a rarity in this area. Most of the trades around here try to stay within one regime, whether you're an electrician, whether you're a plumber, whether you're a carpenter, an excavator, or a masonry contractor. But our commitment to this area was we wanted to offer more things than just one thing to make yourself desirable to more customers. But we are, in some respects, kind of a rarity in the area because we give a big company look to people with a small town ethic and a handshake relationship with a lot of customers.
And again, we're talking to Mark and Trevor from Gemini Construction, and we've got a couple questions, and people can call in with additional questions, I guess, about winterizing or general plumbing, electrical construction questions at 518-622-2598. What should people be doing to get ready for winter now?
One of the biggest things is awareness. Awareness of, are you good with your heating equipment? Has the heating equipment been serviced on a regular basis? Don't wait until the night that it's 10 below zero to find out that your heating equipment is not working or that you're out of fuel or issues like that. You know, there's things that are very, very commonsensical that, unfortunately, when it's left to the very last minute, makes for, a lot of aggravation and a lot of anxiety that way. Make sure you have a fuel dealer who's reputable, that you're on a good relationship with the fuel dealer, with your deliveries, that you've made sure that you're not a chronic running out of fuel all the time, calling the fuel dealer up in the middle of the night. All those things lend themselves to a good working relationship. Make sure you have a good service representative for the things that you're going to need, whether it's heating, electrical, water, sewage, anything like that. Make sure you keep a list of names that you have readily available, that you have working relationships with. That way you're not struggling in the middle of a bad situation to try to literally find somebody, and you can't.
Do you get lots of old houses that you need to put in storm windows or fix up to so that the heating and the cooling isn't as bad as it, or are the old houses better for that?
Sure, yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of the old houses, the windows are kind of substandard. So, there's a lot of heat loss that goes on there, and that's kind of a big, issue where people would, possibly try to think about that before the winter time to, make sure that their oil goes as far as possible as far as eliminating heat loss and things like that. So, sure. Yep.
All right. We do have a couple of questions that I guess we got emailed in from listeners. First is, what kind of maintenance should a homeowner do for a residential well? What is shocking a well? I guess water is very important.
Well, the basic premise that everybody realizes, but a lot of people miss the point of, is that water freezes. So anything to do with your water lines or anything like that, you have to kind of look at the situation that where the location of the pipes are. Are they in a potential freezing possibility? Do you have a well system where you have a well pressure tank that's maybe not located in the structure but outside in a pit or in an outside room where if three sides of a small alcove outside are unheated and you have a pressure tank in there, you have the possibility of the tank freezing. So with a well system, you have potential hazards where if a water line freezes when the well is calling for water and you have a burst pipe, the well will continually supply water because it's trying to satisfy the pressure switch to develop the pressure for the cutoff of the pump. If the water line freezes and breaks while that pump is calling for water, it will never shut off. So sometimes heat tapes, insulation, checking your structures for possible, you know, drafts from broken windows or holes in, you know, the walls or things like that. Very simple things to look for, but they can stop a lot of problems and a lot of expense in the worst of the situations.
And I guess the second part was, what is shocking a well?
Well, shocking a well is when you have a well where the potential for contamination, you can have contamination which is ongoing, which could possibly be from septic systems or possibly like sometimes farmland with fertilizers and animal waste contributes to causing contamination in wells. So shocking a well is a sometimes very quick way of sanitizing the well. It involves putting chlorine right directly into the well casing, and in effect the chlorine will kill the bacteria that's producing the contamination. The shock is a lot of times used by real estate agents when they're trying to get a clear water test on a property transfer. If it's just a cursory kind of contamination, which is just a one-time thing, the shocking will work. But if it's a constant contamination, such as a septic system or a well that has a bad well seal and groundwater is entering the well, then the shocking won't contribute to the resolving the problem. It'll just be a temporary measure. And then you have to do things like putting, say, filtering systems in, UV filters, things like that. So sometimes you have to really understand what is the source of the contamination so that the shocking is just basically not a waste because it's only a temporary stopgap to maybe a larger problem.
Cow pastures are the most common problem?
Not the most common, but if you have a well that has a bad well seal, because a well is basically a drilled hole that goes down into the rock, and the rock strata is where the water collects in the well, and that's what you use for your groundwater or for your well water. Well, the water is supposed to take quite a long period of time to filter through the rocks, and that's what cleanses it. Well, if you have a seal where the steel pipe from the casing has been bored into the rock levels, that's supposed to seal the well from the groundwater entering the well. If that seal is bad and the groundwater enters, then any material that's organic in nature that has bacteria in it will enter the water supply and contaminate it. So that's why sometimes, you know, you have measures to sanitize water that unfortunately can become expensive. But you only know that from sometimes sampling and things like that. So,
all right. We got a second question is, what kind of maintenance is required with a septic system? I guess another below ground question.
The maintenance issues on the septic systems are not very involved. One of the greatest problems with septic systems in general is the idea that most people don't know where they are, and their septic tank is not available from the ground surface to be either check it or to do routine maintenance such as pumping. The rule of thumb on the pumping usually is about every 3 to 5 years on a normal household with two adults, two children, that will take and be sufficient to take and remove the solid part of the effluent that's gone into the septic tank, because the solid parts stay in the tank and what goes out into your leach field is digested material with water, and that is goes out to your leach fields or whatever leaching system you have. The biggest problem with septic systems in general is that most homeowners don't know where they are because they've never been made easy to maintain. They don't have access from the ground where you could just go there, open up a hatchway or a cover and check it for the amount of material that has accumulated so you'll know when it has to be pumped. So the maintenance issues sometimes are less involved than just the sheer application of being prepared for doing the maintenance.
No, we're live right now. I'm gonna go. All right, that was not a call. We're talking with Mark and Trevor Groupe from Gemini Construction in Cairo with questions about winterizing your home and getting ready for winter. Any other common mistakes for winter?
Like I said, it's an awareness thing. It's if people have had freeze-ups before. It's like when people have a flooding problem in their basement and they have a sump pump that's burned out. If you don't repair the sump pump, the next time it floods, you're going to have a flooding problem. Frozen pipes in a house are kind of the same thing. If you have a place where a pipe has froze, there's a reason it froze. It's either located in a place where it is getting disproportionately a larger amount of cold air from the wintertime, or a lack of insulation, or a poor placement of where the pipe is in relation to the structure. Address the issue so that you don't wind up just recurring the same problem over and over again. And again, a lot of this becomes awareness. It's if you see a problem facing you head on, if you avoid it, you'll still have the problem. So if you address the issue, then you remedy the problem. You save the expense and the time involved in having to address it all the time.
And I guess you guys also do snow plowing?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I've seen some early weather reports that say we're going to be in for a heavy snow winter again.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to predict.
That's right. Yeah. You never can tell. Yeah. What is the worst winter you've seen up here?
No, we've had, the blizzard of 1993 we were involved in, where we had, right here in the Acre area, we had 4 feet of snow.
And, 4 feet.
Yeah. And then, naturally, we had the superstorm that was the year before Hurricane Irene, where up here in the Notch in the Cornwallville going up into Windham and Hunter, there were people had 8 feet of snow.
I remember that,
And
yeah.
There was a lot of collapsed roofs and stuff like that. And those storms, the superstorm that was in the wintertime, plus Irene and Sandy, have in a lot of ways changed the engineering that has been involved in the building codes, because the superstorm with the collapsed roofs changed what the engineers had to do for snow loads, and Irene and Sandy changed the engineers' design for drainage. So a lot of, like, the culvert drains and even standard driveways, the size of the pipes have been increased. Normally on a residential driveway, a 12-inch culvert was usually considered sufficient, and I think a lot of the engineers are going to 15 and 18-inch culverts for just a single driveway now.
So you're kind of seeing climate change in construction.
Impacts the costs and the engineering involved in some of these processes that for the longest time never did really change. They were considered to be constants.
But in most cases it's all costing more too.
Right, right. But as far as the snow loads were concerned, the engineers usually had rules of thumb of, say, 100 pounds per square feet for living space and up to 40 to 60 pound square foot roof loads on snow loads. And in certain applications, they've had to increase that. And it's also elevation dependent. So they've put a factor into there of where you are elevation wise so that your snow load down here in the valley with elevations of below 1,000 feet is different than, say, up in Hunter or Tannersville, where you're 2,000 to 3,000 feet. So there's a factor involved in your building
cost. The weight is, the pressure is more the higher up?
The higher you are up, the more likely you are to have heavier snowfall. And the snowfall up there, because the higher elevation means there's less snow loss through melting during the wintertime, so the accumulation of the snow winds up becoming more and more of a snow load.
All right. Any other suggestions or tips you think people should be preparing for this winter?
Like I said, there's no easy answer to a lot of things. The older the house you have, the more issues you're going to face as far as efficiency. And that's the biggest thing. There are programs available through a multitude of agencies to help homeowners with windows, doors, siding, things that will save energy, because the money is there. It's through things like Catskill Mountain Housing and weatherization, community action. There's programs involved that if you have a 25 or 30 year old boiler, that they will help you out possibly to give you a brand new boiler with a higher efficiency, because it saves energy. It saves the taxpayer energy. And a lot of people are unaware of it. A lot of the people don't believe that they're eligible for the programs. And in a lot of ways, the programs are very easygoing when it comes to the elderly people, the retirees, because their incomes are less than they were when they had their working years. And it will make it better for them as far as the amount of money they have to pay, especially if they're on limited incomes.
So you try to work with your customers on finding ways to...
We try to steer them to these agencies as much as possible because it is out there. The help is out there. If it's there, use it. If you don't use it, then the money is being wasted by energy being wasted instead of an application being put in to modernize something that will save everybody the energy. You know, if people are eligible for heat programs, that's a governmental agency that's giving low-income homeowners help with their heat. If you can find a way to save that homeowner from using that heap, some of that heap money could be used to give some other homeowner some help, because the amount of money that's available for these programs is limited. It's not unsustainable. So if the pot is only available to a certain number of people and you can save some of the wasted energy, it can be passed on to somebody else.
All right. If somebody wants to get in contact with you, how do they? Can you give out some contact information?
Sure. They want to call us directly. We have a hard line, 518-622-9829. Their cell phones are available, 518-821-2446, 518-821-2727. We also have email, which is GEMCONCO, shortened form of Gemini Construction. So it's GEMCONCO26@AOL.com. We're on the road, like I said, 12 months a year, available for regular construction and emergency service. So.
All right. Well, thank you guys for stopping by today telling us a little about getting prepared for winter.
Thank you.
All right,
sure,
Mark and Trevor from Gemini Construction on the WGXC Morning Show.